Hello and welcome to another episode of Fool's Daily. On our Beyond the Gates of Antares ride, I am joined by
Rick Priestley.
Still.
Well, mostly, to be fair.
So we've covered the Kickstarter and the rule set, or the core sort of rule mechanics as such. I'd like you to talk a little about the what is it? You know, what's the background?
What is all this nonsense?
Yes.
I'll tell you what all this nonsense is. Beyond the Gates of Antares, and as I say before, I just call it Antares. Antares is my new science fiction game system and background. And the actual background to it is something which I've been kind of thinking about for years and years and years. But it's really my approach to retelling that big story. It's here's a universe which is big enough for you to participate in or invent stuff within, if you like. So it's a background deliberately intended to be participatory, if that's a real word.
So there's an element of narrative and role playing there potentially.
Yep,
there.
That's exactly it, Conrad. I've kind of gone back to my roots. The older I've got, the more I've kind of reverted to childhood. So,
yeah, as long as it's not in the toilet area yet, that's fine.
Yeah, it's best. There are some things that you will never know. and I've created this background that basically says, imagine that there's a network that just connects lots of different star systems throughout the galaxy and possibly beyond this galaxy and possibly beyond this time frame or dimension even. And that nexus was created eons ago by an ancient race, which I call the Builders. And humanity, or we discover this network by stumbling upon the gateway that's in our own solar system. And what we discover is it's deserted because the Builders are long gone and no one much uses it. So we start to explore it.
Sounds like proper Builders, actually, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it is a bit like proper Builders. Turn up and drink your tea and disappear. The idea is that every single link in the network goes to a place that's a nexus, and that's Antares, what we call the star Antares. Now, rather than being a star, my premise is that it's actually a construct, an artificial construct. It just looks like a star. Mm-hmm. In fact, Antares doesn't look much like a star at all because it's so big. The actual surface of Antares is enormous. If that star were to be at the centre of our own solar system, the edges of the photosphere of the sun would actually be somewhere between Mars and Jupiter. It's that kind of size.
Yeah.
So that gives you a kind of background to play against. So if you want to actually go from one world to another in the Antarian space, you have to go through your local wormhole. You come out on the surface of Antares at the equivalent wormhole on the surface. And then you have to travel to wherever the wormhole is on the surface of Antares to wherever you're going.
Yeah.
And that could be the distance. Again, you have to imagine that there's that sun that's as big as nearly the orbit of Jupiter. You have to travel at sublight speed across to that point. So actually, although space travel is largely instantaneous, travelling over Antares isn't. And what it gives you, what that idea gives you, is the ability to go, well, if I control this portion of the surface of Antares, I've got a spatial empire.
Yeah.
And its borders are real borders, because there are adjoining spatial empires or individual places. And at the same time, those gates on Antares, they imagine they're like great big towers, and they rise and fall from the surface, and sometimes gates disappear below the surface for years and years, and those places are cut off. So you also are, as well as controlling an area on the surface, you're also exploring.
Yep.
And that means there are brave new worlds to boldly go to.
I've not heard that before.
No, it's completely new. Places that pop up all of a sudden, and places that need to be explored. So you've got a universe that has spatial empires, that has lots of individual planets, you have hidden planets, you have worlds that appear and disappear, and it just makes it very open. And that's the basic idea behind
basically,
it.
I think you've covered quite a lot there in terms of you can do your, if you were playing the game, you know, and creating a campaign or narrative for your players, it sounds as though you could do whatever you want, really, to a certain extent.
Exactly. Well, that was the original idea behind the 40K background. It just got strangled at birth because there was a need to...
tighten it up.
No, it was actually rather more cynical than that. I'll just one briefly, because we really want to talk about the Tories. But because Games Workshop organised its own campaigns within its stores, they wanted everybody to be able to play everybody. So the original idea of the 40K universe, where the Space Marine chapters were all spread all over, became, no, everyone has to be everywhere, because I want my Space Wolves to be able to play this other race,
yeah.
And the fact that I put them on opposite sides of the galaxy, which meant they were, you know, years apart, got ignored. So the background to 40K kind of fell apart very quickly. It became World War II in space, ironically, because I'm taking a World War II game, putting it in space. Yeah. But that's the basic idea.
Okay.
But then you have, we tend to call them factions, because that's what you'd call a computer game side. It's not a term I'd normally use, but the big players in this universe what I'd call they're all human. The idea is that humanity is spread throughout the Antarian space.
Yep.
And settled many worlds, and some of those worlds have subsequently declined, been lost, rose up again. And humanity has, to some extent, evolved. And there are... different appearances. So you've got... basically, you've got mutants, or morphs. You've got your basic human... Yes, little rubber men. You've got your very basic human, because I think most people relate to that very easily. And, you know, if we didn't have ordinary humans in our universe, it would be a bit silly. So you've got ordinary humans, but then you've got lots of other different kinds, including, one we've already made, Boromites. And Boromites are a particularly strong visual kind of human. They look very different. They've got very craggy skins, and they're kind of asteroid miners. And to some extent, they've got some of the characteristics I'd associate with dwarfs in a fantasy context. You know, they're the miners, they're insular.
They're just not short.
They're not short at all.
They don't have beards.
No. they're unbearded, and they're all craggy. If anything, they look a little bit like small trolls. You know, if you go online, you'll see all this stuff.
Yeah, they've reminded me of the Thing out of Fantastic Four.
Yeah, there's a bit of that going on as well, because he's a kind of lava rock man, isn't he?
Exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they've got a little bit of that character about them. Although I tend to paint mine a kind of slaty blue colour. So it stops them looking like the Thing a bit.
So these figures, or some of this particular race or faction or whatever you want to call it, the Boromites, it is available at the moment, yeah?
It's not quite available at the moment, but we've made it.
Okay.
All the work has been put onto our website. So if you go onto the Warlord Games website and you look into the Beyond the Gates of Antares section, you'll see all of our posts of work in progress, and there's also a background information and information about the game if you wanted to read more about that. And as we approach our release, we're going to put more and more up. And there's also a forum if people wanted to contribute to that. But the main faction, the big site, is called the Concord, or the Pan-Human Concord. And this is the closest I get to the Imperium in terms of 40K. It's the big faction, and it's ruled by a kind of what I call an integrated machine intelligence. It's like a cloud intelligence based on machines rather than human beings.
Right.
But there's one evolved species, which I call the New Hue or New Humans, who are machine integrated. So in effect, they're on they're kind of wired up. These guys react through the through a kind of atmosphere that's saturated with nanobots.
Okay.
Which means they're constantly able to sort of relate to machinery. They can, if you like, turn the television on from the other side of the room. You know, it's that kind of stuff.
They'd be irritating to have in your living room then.
Yes, and they are in sort of permanent communication with each other via the nanosphere. So they've got, it's like they've got permanent email going on in their heads.
Well, that's always also on the irritating.
Yeah, and they're tall, they're elegant, they're slightly alien-esque looking, but they are a human, a stretched, etiolated human. They look a bit like Jervis Johnson, you know, you can imagine. sorry, Jervis, didn't mean that. And they're quite elegant. I call them the mandarins of the Concorde.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. They have a slightly oriental dress style, which I quite wanted to play upon. But the Concorde troops themselves, the military units of the Concorde, are kind of hard science fiction. They're kind of flexible suits with hard armor patches over. In some ways, they're kind of inspired by a lot of the modern TV and films that are current. So they don't look like space marines. They don't have massive great shoulder pads, and they don't have a crotch that's as wide as their legs. You know, they're a more human a more normal, credible human anatomy.
But I'm guessing from a design principle point of view that's, as you said, you know, the world, the universe was conquered or travelled by humans, so that's an intended sort of design look as well, I'm guessing.
Yes, it is, yeah. The Concorde kind of exists to exist. It's kind of like a dystopia and a utopia at the same time.
Yeah.
I think I've been reading a lot of Ian M. Banks novels when I did it, so science fiction. And his background is like that. You go, what a fantastic place to live in, but I wouldn't like to live in it.
yeah, he's great to read about.
Yeah. So the Concorde's like that. So if they decide that something's a threat to them, they'll destroy it. There's no kind of, but yeah, I didn't mean it. They just destroy it. But similarly, if an opportunity to explore comes on, they need to get in there and find out about it because they want to add to more information, the sum of human knowledge. And do you remember I talked about the builders and the builders creating the background nexus?
Yes.
Well, finding builder technology is one of the big objectives in this universe because builder technology is way beyond anything, even in this very advanced universe. So you have a kind of a,
that's
a
like
driver.
Yeah, that's like the political, technical, or whatever. Yeah. It's the unseen. I suppose it's a bit like what did the Skaven? What were the Skaven always digging for?
Oh yeah, warp stone.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Well, that was just cocaine by another name, wasn't it?
In a different colour.
It blitzed out of their heads on warp stone. Yeah. It gives you something to create backstories around, which is all very useful.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like one of the major factions, and then the other major faction are called the Isaurian Shard, and what they are is actually a splinter group from the Concorde. It's like the original human civilization that the Concorde has developed from, split into two, and the Isaurian Shard split because they fought a war against an alien species, and in the process, their machine intelligence integrated some of this alien intelligence. In effect, their computer programs got infected by this bug. So the whole of their civilization is now kind of cross-human, cross-alien technology.
Yeah.
But they are humans. There's nothing alien about them. But they have this silicon-based technology as well. Whereas in the Concorde, their machine intelligence recognizes this as an intruder. So whenever they meet, their rival machine intelligences, and remember these all communicate with nanobots, so their rival machine intelligences perceive each other to be threats.
Yes.
It's like a computer program that's got buggy.
A virus.
It's gone viral.
Yeah. Yeah.
So each of them sees the other one as an enemy, even though there's no reason to fight. And this is where I do enjoy this kind of thing. They have no reason to be enemies, but madness means they have to be.
I like that. I think that's quite
It's like the real world.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't believe that things should be logical and sensible, because real life isn't.
No, exactly. Right.
Real civilizations aren't. People believe all sorts of nonsense. There's no reason why civilizations have to be rational.
We're back to why make up stuff when it's already there in the real world anyway.
Oh, God, yeah. But you couldn't make it up, the stuff that goes on, could you?
No.
So they're the two biggies. And then the other ones, which are I find in many ways more interesting, but have yet to be developed, are the there's a race called the Freeborn. What these are mobile spaceships. They're cities in space. These people have no planet. They have very few planets, and most of those are maybe hidden away. But they are really like a travelling community. But they are the merchants. So where the Concorde and the Isaurians can't really communicate with each other, they can all communicate with the Freeborn, called the Vardo of the Freeborn. So they act as middlemen and merchants in this universe. And they have they're proudly independent. They have rival houses that all are intermarried or rivals, and some of them hate each other and fight wars. And they basically are the way in which things move between one society and another in Antarian space. So they're quite interesting.
When you say move, what do you mean by goods or anything?
Yeah,
or
goods, services, technology.
Stuff.
Stuff. That's it. And they also trade in mercenaries. And all of these, both the Isaurian Shard and the Concorde, and all human communities can potentially use mercenaries. And what the what these Freeborn do is they hire out as mercenaries, but also they find barbarian planets or planets which are fairly primitive, and they basically train them up as mercenaries and hire them out.
So it looks to me as though you've got, was it three races plus this fourth one? Was it four or three?
If you count the Boromites as a separate faction, which they can be, then that's four. We've got two more in preparation. One's called the Algorin, which are an example of a small group. They're the equivalent of, if this were World War II, these are the equivalent of Finland. You know, small, proudly independent, fierce as you like, but they're never going to be. They're never going to be the people that decide the fate of the war. Their fate is always going to be in the hands of others, ultimately.
Yeah.
But by God, you don't want to mess with them. Yeah, that's the Algorin alike.
There's pictures of the squad on the site.
They're the first digital sculpts we did. And the reason we did those first is because we had a strong idea of what we wanted them to look like. And we had never done digital sculpts before.
Right.
So we wanted to use something where we knew where we were going, but they weren't the most important thing we had to do.
Yeah.
And as it's turned out, they've been really successful. I think they're really good. And the sculptors made a fantastic job of it. So much so that we're now looking at Algorin and going, we might big them up a bit.
Who are you using in-house sculptors, or are you subcontracting it out?
We originally had Kev White do the first model, or character model.
Mm.
It's called Hansen Nyroba, who is he's kind of like an independent mercenary commander. Kev said he didn't want to do any more because he had lots of his own work to do. Though he might come back, you never know. I hope so. But we've basically employed another sculptor just to work on Antares.
Okay, because one of the guys I know is Russ Charles, who does a lot of freelance work as well for various companies, and he's very, very good. He's come... I think he originally was a teacher, but he's come from a sort of special effects 3D... type.
Yes, I know Russ.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is a great guy. I can't say who we're using.
Okay, I won't try. But what I was going back to saying was that the fact that with the freebooters, you've got what I can see as being a huge, you've got an open, you know, a blank canvas for doing whatever you want there from design perspective and a look and feel perspective.
Well, that's what I like to do. I like to invent factions that appeal to different people. So the Concorde and the Isaurians are kind of like two sides to the same coin, but they're organised, they're military. They're kind of Imperial Guard, although the Isaurian Shard have a very different look. But they're fairly... they're easy ideas to get your head around.
And they've got a look as well. They've got a sort of distinctive looks for each of them, so people can identify with them if they want to.
Yeah, they have. And I'd say that the looks are quite contemporary.
Yeah,
but they're also modern. They're not. A lot of Games Workshop stuff looks very old-fashioned now because it was all designed in the 80s.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, I suppose you're right. Yeah.
But the and time moves on, doesn't it? And people's expectations change. And yeah. Also, I wouldn't want to do something that looks like Games Workshop because I don't want to get sued. That'd be very bad.
Yeah, no, that's true. So you said there was one more race that was in development, or?
Yeah, there's the other race is called the Gwar, or Gar. It's G-W-A-R, but I was told there's a rock band called the Gwar. So I've changed it to G-H-A-R. But I still insist on pronouncing it Gwar. You know?
It's a silent or hidden W.
I can say G-W-A-R pronounced Ole Biscuit Barrels, you know. we haven't quite worked these guys out yet. But the idea behind them is that they're... I've taken my cue off Daleks, you know, a super evolved race that almost lives inside a battle suit.
Yeah.
So they are human, but they've kind of degenerated or been perfected to a level whereby they exist within their battle suits because they are a kind of war race. Yep. They're bred or genetically engineered, more likely, to be soldiers.
They sound like the one for me.
Yeah. And they live in these quite big, chunky battle suits. And their units might have to be a bit smaller because...
You're talking twos and threes potentially there, yep, or even individuals, yep, possibly.
And they're a bit gurgly and a bit nasty and, yep, a bit slightly primitive compared to the other races. And they use dirty, I've called them sort of like dirty nano weapons. So they've got weapons that just basically take out big chunks of the nanosphere, which is like the equivalent of taking out all the electricity, all the gas, all the anything that makes all the radio waves, anything that makes anything work in this universe tends to be nano based.
Yeah.
So these big dirty nano bombs, it's like taking a nuclear bomb and just letting it off. But they can survive it. They're built to survive it.
And then they just move on.
Yeah, they move. Well, they slave. They take other races slave, and they stick them in their factories and they make them turn out weapons and armaments. I mean, these are bad guys, you know, these are nasty. but simple-minded, honest creatures.
Who just want to get...
Just want to be loved.
Live from day to day.
Well,
and be
kill
loved
from day to day, perhaps. You know.
So in terms of artwork and look, I've seen the Boromites and I've seen... What was the Al...
The Algorin.
Algorin,
yeah.
And I've seen some of the... what was it? The individual sculpt of... the freeborn mercenary captain, was it?
Hanson Iroba. We kind of used that figure as the basis for some of the underpinnings of the armour on the Concord. So the style is there. And we've developed a look for all of our weapons. So the main weapons are kind of like plasma guns and mag rifles, and it's fairly standard science fiction stuff. But I've tried to give all the weapons a distinct character in the game, so rather than just being bigger or smaller versions of the same thing, the different kinds of weapons operate in different ways, and they interact with different sorts of armours. And most of the armour in the game is a field-based defences,
yeah.
So it doesn't affect the look of the models so much, which gives you the freedom to have models that look quite exotic, but which are quite heavily armoured. You know, they could be clothed but heavily armoured at the same time. So, really, I'm trying to create a very big canvas, you see.
In terms of the development of these lines, we're presumably a long way off from having proper ranges as such. But if you're looking at next year for the game to release, are you looking for all of these races or factions or whatever you want to call them to have a number of supporting figures or, yeah, ranges in them, or are you looking for them to be completely done, or are we going for the core sort of image, core sort of factions first, yeah, before you start?
What I've done is I've designed a number of playable forces, forces.
Yeah.
And what we're doing is we're designing those playable forces first. And we've already done the Boromites. In fact, we've practically finished the Boromites. The only thing we have to do is we have to do a printout of one of the digital designs, because the big weapons, there's the frag borer, which is like a mining tool adapted to a weaponry, and there's a mag launcher, a magnetic launcher.
Mm-hmm.
Those two have been done as digital sculpts, so they haven't actually been outputted yet.
Okay.
But once they're done, I'll have everything, and that means they'll have, I think, two or three different troop types. A command troop type, and three different support weapon troop types. and that's a core army. That's playable force. But then we'll just do more and more stuff. Finish, because we can always add more.
Yeah. So you've got stuff there to allow people to potentially play the rule set in whatever state it is. And will they be released for sale before the rule set, those figures?
Yeah, we hope to release the first of our Boromites probably mid-year, so June, July of this year, 2014.
Okay.
But we'll do them bit at a time as we get the molds ready and we get them out. Yeah. And we're actually going to... if you don't already know, we're actually going to be giving away some of the Boromite models with mail order pickups at Salute. So anyone who's pre-ordered a mail order from Warlord Games at Salute will get a free Boromite figure as a sample.
I might have to order the Bolt Action rulebook then.
Yeah, yeah.
Pre-order.
if you go on the Warlord Games website, then it does explain all that. That's actually covered. Yeah. So the Boromites will be the first, mid-year, and the first Algarin we'll have as soon as we can. Now, these have all been finished to design standard, but have not been outputted yet, because these are digital sculpts.
Okay.
So they're going to be outputted, and then we'll mould them as metal figures in this conventional way. Now, depending on how that goes, we should have some of those available about the same time as the Boromites, or just after. So between June, July 2014 and Christmas 2014, we're going to have regular releases. And that we need to do that because we need to fund the development.
For the game, essentially.
For the game, yeah. Yeah. And for more models. We need to pay the designer. So we'll do
I thought,
it.
Can't he just work for free? For the love?
You know, I said that. Why don't you just work for the love? I am. Says he.
Lead by example.
Yeah, but apparently not. No. They talk about food and children and, you know, roof over my head, all this nonsense.
Nah.
Oh, well.
They just don't understand, do they?
They don't. We are funding it bit by bit. And so we'll release it bit by bit. And I'll also update the rules. So there'll be a PDF on the website, say June or July, depending on how quickly we get it done.
And as you've already mentioned, Rick, you know, if you want to read about the game and...
it's all on there already.
It's all there on the Warlord site.
Yep. And I think there's an update going up next week, which probably by the time this comes out, which actually talks about all of the factions and describes what they're all about. And there's already a piece up which describes what Antarian Space is about and the whole idea behind the Nexus and the Builders.
Yep.
And then there's lots of detail about all the work in progress, including the Boromites and Algarin. And I've written one that's actually the first Concord model, which we've got a concept piece for, a digital sculpt. But it's the first digital sculpt for the Concord, and that'll go up in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it as well, because I've only seen it over the shoulder of Paul Sawyer. I've not actually
That's
seen
That's hard it. To do, isn't it, unless he's lost a bit of a...
He has lost a bit, but, you know...
Does he still wear his hair long? Oh, no, he never did.
Yes, he's got it.
Sorry.
Yeah, he still looks the same. Yes, yeah.
Well, we've gone extremely long. There's going to be alarms going and everything, but I'm sure it's been it'll be well worth it for the listeners out there. I'm going to wind it up, but what I'd like to do is have you back on the show as the game develops, and I think the dog wants to come on as well, just to get an update of where we are with the game in development.
Down, boy, down! No, not kill!
Sorry. So, with that, I've been Conrad.
And I've been Rick, and he's been Lucky the Dog. Hello, dog.
You're lucky to be alive. Goodbye.
Cheers, Conrad.
Bye.
You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're @fools_daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.